Prudent Money with Bob Brooks is sponsored by the Prudent Money Foundation on 91.3.
Well, how are colleges being affected by COVID-19? Today we're going to take a look. Stay tuned for Prudent Money. Good afternoon and welcome to the Prudent Money Radio Show. I'm your host, Bob Brooks. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. So COVID-19 is affecting just about every way of life. Today, college admissions expert John Hupala is here to discuss the impact on the financial aspects of college. John, welcome to Prudent Money.
Bob, good afternoon. Nice to talk to you again.
So tell me, since we talked last month, how are things in New York?
Oh, well, thanks for asking, Bob. Last month on the way out, you offered prayers, and they've been received here in New York. Quite honestly, the big question was, could you get enough cleaning material and ways to protect yourself, and was there food on the shelves, and all that's been taken care of. The health part of the crisis, we're still going up the mountain and understanding just how bad it was going to get. You know, thank God the worst predictions were not anywhere close to coming true. But many people are still dying here, and so it maintains, you know, it's a pretty serious situation. The real issue is just around the economics. You know, back when we talked a month ago, no one was really too much concerned about what the economic damage was going to be. But it's the days are going by, Bob. You can imagine, just like in many other places in the country, the toll that this is taking on the economy, getting people back to work, is going to be very significant, and it's going to come over. And I think it's going to take a long time to recover from this. But thank you so much for asking. We're doing a lot better in New York today than we were just about a month
ago. Good. You know, John, I've said this many times. It's almost like a Cat 5 hurricane is hitting the coastline and it's standing still. And we know there's damage, but we just don't know how bad it is until it moves out. I think that's going to be the description of this economy when it really comes down to it. Because I kid you not, and I know you see this, I see this without question, how this pandemic touches everything. And college is no exception. I mean, what would you say, pure speculation, and some listeners might think I'm being overly dramatic, but what do you think the chances are that classes start up as usual this fall?
Well, Bob, it's funny you use the words as usual. I think there's about a 0% chance that they start as usual. If we think about it, I think about it, you know, in the BC before Corona and now after, you know, the way we think about life BC, I think there's no chance that any school, even the most, you know, this has been a very regional issue, and from the perspective that the urban centers have been hit extremely hard, the more rural centers or places in the country are still affected by it, but not in the same concentrations. So I think the same thing will happen with the schools, where schools that are more rural, more isolated, they will have less effect on their operating system than the big urban schools. But I think all the schools, I can't think of going to any school in the country that won't have some change in their operating model around distancing and how they're going to learn. And now, one of the things that I really hadn't thought much about was just this whole idea of what happens with the labs. You know, we're talking about remote learning.
Right,
which
right.
Is great. You know, we've been able to do it, but we can't get into a chemistry lab. How are the medical students going to start to, you know, go through their program? So, as usual, I think there's just no chance until there's a vaccine that we're going to be elbow to elbow in a classroom anytime soon.
You know, I've heard that colleges are having a tough time financially, and you know, today they're still receiving tuition payments and teaching online classes, but how are they getting hit in other ways financially, at least today, and then contrast that with the fall, because that would be a totally different situation.
You're right, and you know, Bob, the demographics for the schools have not been good for the last decade. And it turns out that in 2012 there were about 21 million college students enrolled in universities and colleges across the country. This year, the enrollment was 18,250,000, so about 11% reduction. So the schools, remember back in the 2010-2015 place, they were still competing, but they knew they were competing for scarcer numbers of students. So that's when they started doing heavier tuition discounting, meaning that if the sticker price, and we talked about sticker price in the past, if the sticker price of the school were $50,000, that's the room, board, everything, maybe with financial aid, they were actually offering that to some students at $25,000 or $30,000. The tuition discounting became pretty significant because they saw the demographic changes just from the birth rate patterns 18 years ago. You can look forward and say what percentage of those kids are going to wind up in college. And those numbers of births back 15 to 20, 25 years ago were down pretty significantly from the generation before. So the schools saw this coming, but they were at that time also where they were competing for students really hard. So they started building dorms and they had these, you know, the lazy rivers on campus and all the rest of it to try to compete. And it gets me to your point. There are a couple of effects. You know, one, of course, is that some students now are saying, I want a refund for my tuition from this semester because now I'm on Zoom rather than in the classroom. I want the money back from my dorms, and I'm not eating in your cafeteria, so send me some money back. And then you look forward to what's going to happen. But there is one piece here that is like an onion. When you start peeling back the layers to get to the actual financials of the school and how they could be affected in ways you and I might not be thinking about, one of those is that when many of those smaller, particularly liberal arts schools, private schools, and even some of the university, state-based universities began these very significant building expansion programs, they were doing those with bond deals, you know, tax-exempt bonds here and there. And I know in some of those bond deals, there were covenants that said you're going to maintain enrollment at X or Y. And now there's going to be some threat to some of those enrollment patterns as a result of not only the demographics, but also consumers voting with their feet to stay closer to home rather than getting on a plane and going far away to a college. So I think your comment is the right one. It's going to come out over a period of time. We're just starting to, you know, the Cat 5 hurricane is still right on top of us. But as it starts to move away and we start to see a little less rain in the sky, we're also going to start seeing some of the underlying damage that's being done that may be very difficult for some of these schools to erase.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the fall, because if do you see an adjustment in tuition if, let's just say that you're going to XYZ college and they've decided that because of the pandemic they're not going to hold classes in physical classes for the entire semester and going to start back up on, in the winter, I would imagine that they would almost have to adjust the tuition. But then that begs the second question: can they even survive if they do that?
Yeah, and that's a terrific question. And the reality of it is that some schools will not be able to survive. Bob, I have a magazine article in front of me. This is pretty incredible. Remember that magazine Business Week?
Yeah.
You used to be able to go and buy it on the
sure.
You could buy it on a newsstand. And so in April 2003, they wrote an article about the changes in higher education, and they basically talked about colleges in crisis. And it says, as costs spin out of control, funding is in retreat, the bottom line, some fundamental changes lie ahead. And so now we fast forward 17 years, and I've used this, if anyone's ever seen me speak at some of these conferences, I use this fairly frequently because I just am floored that it's still a true statement. In this Business Week article, it said, higher education is one of the few sectors in the U.S. economy that has not seriously restructured. This is in 2003. Partly that's because education is essentially a social good provided mostly by nonprofit institutions in an environment, and this is the part that I absolutely could not believe when I read it, and I stated again, it says, in which the traditional laws of market economics have never really applied. I mean, think about that.
Yeah, that's true.
Of the U.S. economy, and they're saying, well, market force is there because people will do things, college students will go, parents will pay, loan programs will be driven so that you could attend this school. And now, with this pandemic, we're learning a lot about what we actually need and what we want. And I think we're starting to see some pretty fundamental changes where people might start saying to themselves, you know what? I think it's a good idea for my son or daughter to go and get an education. But it might not have to be a four-year education at one of those fancy private schools somewhere. And then we know what will happen then when we start voting with our feet like that. The economics for some of those smaller schools without any big endowment to support them, you know what's going to happen. They're going to start cutting programs, meaning letting faculty and tenured faculty go if they can. They're going to find ways to cut their sports programs. They're going to start cutting down on whatever they can to try to stay viable. And I'm afraid that not all of them will be successful with that.
You know, you mentioned sports. I can't even imagine a fall without football. But I'm sure these colleges, these big colleges, can't imagine the revenue that won't be there because take football, for instance.
Right. There's another layer of the onion. Absolutely right. Those big schools, and they've already been affected because of what happened with the basketball tournament, right? We didn't have
that
the
was
March
huge.
Madness. Right? You know, it's huge. And what's going to happen now? The schools, they're not having their spring football program in place. I know at schools that I'm familiar with, a Boston University graduate, and Boston University doesn't have any summer classes this year. And I know that the athletes, BU doesn't have a football program, but we have a pretty competitive, nationally ranked hockey program. And those hockey recruits are not going to be on campus over the summer getting ready for their season. So, again, that's not a big revenue sport, but it's the same thing in each one of these sports. And for some of the schools that really depend on some of that revenue from the TV contracts and from competing in the football leagues, it's going to be devastating to their economic performance, no question.
You know, this is a purely speculative question, but what would you imagine the decrease in freshman enrollment because of this pandemic versus the percentage of freshman enrollment that they had in December?
So this is significant because factor in the idea of the foreign students who will not be coming to the school
that's true.
In the fall, right? And
right.
Some schools have 20 or 25% of their class because the foreign students are full-pay students. And in the economic model for the colleges, the full-pay student is your prized possession, and they're not going to get on a plane from China or from India or from Europe, wherever else they're coming, to come to the United States. So it's going to be very significant. It's already telling, Bob, that many schools are already going on to their wait list. You know, there's just, you know, as well as I do, May 1st was sort of declaration day. That was the day that you're supposed to put your deposit down. Many of the schools have now moved that to June or later. But it was around the 1st of May when the schools knew what their yield was going to be on that freshman class. The yield, of course, is the number of students who actually accept the acceptance from the school. So they made the decision they want to go. And the schools are used to, particularly the big schools, are used to 90, 95% yield. So they don't have to go to their wait list very often. I was reading articles a week ago, before the 1st of May, where schools were already reaching out to students on the wait list saying, we have a place for you. Or the more aggressive ones got that marketing information and were sending notes to high school seniors saying, no sense getting on a plane and going across the country. We have a place for you in our class. Just enroll now. So that's how desperate some of the schools are getting already.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. If you want more information about John, www.mycollegecorner.com would be the website. It's got a lot of great information. If you're a parent that has a child, it's junior, senior, really just in high school, and you're thinking about college, it's a great resource, and it's all free information. You know, I sent you this article about and I just wanted your opinion on it. It says, U.S. graduates have sued more than 50 schools demanding partial tuition, room and board, and fee refunds after they shut down. Talk about what you're seeing with some of this.
Yeah, my initial reaction was, boy, it didn't take long for the lawyers to get involved, did it?
Right.
but sure enough, I can understand that, where students do feel harmed. They are paying, big money, some of them $50,000 and upwards. So, on a per semester basis, $25,000 to $30,000 to attend a class that wasn't held. The other thing that is quite telling is that a Zoom meeting is not the same, obviously, as being in a classroom, and lots of things have come as a result of that. So I'm not surprised to see that that they're asking for that. Some of the schools have taken, in my view, Bob, a ridiculous posture that, you know, they have costs. They have to have the buildings. They had their meal plan set up. So they were giving what I thought were pretty, I'm going to say, sad or ridiculously small refunds for some of that. Other schools have stepped up and said, you know, from the day you went home, we're just going to figure out what that prorated value is, and we're going to either apply it to next semester or send you a refund. But all the schools, and we talked about this last time, all the schools are scrambling because they've gotten hit by this tsunami or this Cat 5 hurricane, and they're getting battered from all angles. And now this lawsuit is just another, I think, in a longer line of issues that they're going to have. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know the technicalities of whether or not the students are going to be successful in this, but I think no question the schools have to have some rational, reasonable reaction to this because they have to play for the longer game, the ones who can. And I we talked about this earlier, it's the ones who can. Some of the schools that are financially threatened may just literally be in a position where they don't have the cash flow to do anything, and that's going to obviously damage their brand, might actually put some of the schools out of business. And I would not be surprised if we didn't see some fairly large fallout from smaller schools with small endowments who were already under financial pressure, where they're just going to have to close their doors or merge with another school.
Yeah, that's hard to imagine, but it could be the reality. You know, I would imagine that going forward, one of the changes that you'll see in the application process is, and you tell me what you think about this, is a release of liability from schools the natural disaster occurred, and you know, you're already on the hook for that particular year of tuition, because I can't imagine some of these schools have to refund tuition and stay in business. I mean, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's really tough, and as you said over the course of the last month or so, I'm sure many times, but none of us could have imagined some of what we're living through right now.
No.
What I said before was, you know, can you imagine telling your freshman or your sophomore that I don't feel comfortable with you getting on an airplane to go somewhere? You know, and air traffic's down 95%. Just think about that. 6 months ago, if I said, Bob, gee, I don't know, I'm a little concerned about getting on an airplane to go to a conference, you know, that would have been a pretty extreme remark.
It would have been. Things have changed quite a bit. Well, tell me this. For the scenario where you get an offer letter from the school and you're getting a financial aid package put together, some of which is the scholarship money, how would you go about, knowing that schools are really in a tough position, how would you go about negotiating some more financial aid?
Yeah, there are two parts to that, Bob. One, is that there's a natural appeal process that you can go through. And in our book, Planning Financial Families, College Dreams, we made a point of saying schools don't like it when you show up and say, you know, I need to negotiate this. Rather, they like to softer approach, which is, well, you know, I need to make an appeal. And the appeals, which are successful, is based on changes in financial circumstance. So many people right now have grounds for an appeal on those extraordinary conditions. Because they've been sick with the virus. Unfortunately, there may be a death in the family as a result of the virus or loss of a job in the family. So the FAFSA form, which they filed back in October and November, which presented the family income to be good, and that was what the financial aid decision was made on, now that income number could be significantly different. So families who are in that boat should contact the financial aid office of the college. Schools are starting to look again and look at ways to help those families as best they can. And it doesn't hurt to ask, but again, a fact-based appeal for special circumstances is what is most successful in that aid award appeal process.
Once again, John's website is www.mycollegecorner.com. So what do you anticipate as the – there's got to be a line in the sand that if they're going to close things down, they've got to do it by a certain date. And if not, they need to go forward with some ramping up and getting some things going. What do you think that drop-dead date is?
Yeah, boy, that's a great question. And it goes back to some of what I said earlier, which is some of the more rural schools and places in the country that, thank God, are not quite as affected as the big urban areas. I think it'll be easier for them. There's actually a list that you can go and take a look at. We posted an article on mycollegecorner.com last week where we talked a little bit about what that is. It's how is COVID-19 affecting colleges? And we talked in that particular article specifically about the list that's out there. So the schools are saying we're likely to open with these changes. We're less likely to open with these other changes. So folks can go on there. It's the April 14th posting, Tips for High School Juniors, Seniors, and Student Loan Borrowers. And in that article specifically, there's a link so you can go and get the most recent information. But I think, Bob, for the drop-dead date, for many of the schools that are going to start in August, they're going to have to tell the students by mid-June what their plan is going to be, either to be remote or have some on-campus instruction as well. Clearly, all the schools are trying to maintain a position where they can have an on-campus experience, but that really does remain to be seen.
All I got to say is I would hate to be a college administrator. I mean, what a ton of pressure and decision making that it's a high risk decision making when you really look at it. Well, John, as always, you bring a great perspective. Love to hear your thoughts on all this. And his website once again is www.mycollegecorner.com. John, good luck to you and stay healthy.
Bob, thanks so much. You as well.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. I tell you, it's a sobering thing when you start to think about everything in life being touched by this pandemic. And it's even harder not to imagine that there's actually schools, with, you know, no different than the way that running a company could go under. And then there was one question I didn't have time to ask John, but it comes down to, you know, most payment plans where a parent pays by the month instead of paying a lump sum start in June for the upcoming school year. And that's a tough one. You know, as a parent, do you start laying that money out when things could be drastically different by the time August turns around? But it's really interesting as to how things are changing and what they're going to look like and the uncertainty ahead. Hey, listen, I did post 5 new teaching courses, videos on our YouTube channel. So make sure you go to the website, www.prudentmoney.com. Click the link at the top and go check out the videos. I appreciate you subscribing and liking them if you do. Hey, this is Bob Brooks. If you got a question for me, go to the website, www.prudentmoney.com. Because we're all out of time. Until we do meet again next time, keep the faith and have a great rest of the day.
That's all the time we have for today. Questions or comments for Bob, or to find out more great information like what you've just heard, visit www.prudentmoney.com. Be sure to join Bob Brooks again for the next edition of Prudent Money.